Welcome to Connected on Purpose, a podcast about leadership, management, and getting great shit done. I'm April Burrows, the founding partner of Flow Office Wisdom, a socially minded company that works with small to medium-sized businesses and not-for-profits. Our purpose is to inspire and empower leaders by supporting their vision through mobilizing their plans and getting the tasks done. This podcast is for anyone who loves to glean insight from others, to evolve in their work, and believes they can lead their own life and at any level in an organization. Okay, welcome everyone to this episode. Today, I'm excited to be connecting with my good friend, Drew Gillette. Drew is a teacher and community leader who has a real passion for people of all kinds. I just love how he sees the best in people, and I believe that is one of the reasons he is such an empowering leader. Drew is from the community of Guelph, Ontario, where I'm also from, where he was named in 2018 top 20 under 40 dynamic leaders. I've had the pleasure of working through the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey this past 6 months, which is a real staple for me as a leader. I've read that book many, many times over the last couple decades. It's also really fun to connect with Drew about the tool that we both use, the Enneagram, that some of you may have heard about. It's becoming quite a thing in the world of leadership and business and personal development. Drew is a self-identified 6 in the Enneagram, and I really love how he shares so openly about what he discovers about his true self and his authentic struggles. So without further ado, I am thrilled to introduce to you Drew. Hi, Drew.
Hey.
Thank you for coming and Thanks being a part of this interview. This whole podcast is really about the things that I'm passionate about. Leadership, culture, values, living from the inside out, being authentic, seeing people be, you know, blossom into the greatest people that they can be. And you've hung around with me long enough now to know that I love to talk about this. So thank you for being here today to talk about these kind of issues with me. Thanks and I really, I love that you are really a person that has a heart for community. And so that's why I think people would love to hear from you today. So I've just given a description of how I see you, Drew, but I'm wondering, did I describe you accurately in terms of what you see yourself to be? And what's missing if I didn't?
Oh, gosh, that was a very humbling introduction. I would like to think that that describes me. I think I would also add just that I have a passion for social justice. Definitely like having conversations and educating about it. And I think, like most people, it's something that I am continually learning about. So it's not something that I'm an expert on, but I love having those conversations and pushing people to think outside of themselves and their identities, to think about other people and how we can live in a more equitable world.
That makes a lot of sense to me from who I see you as. I just didn't name it as that. But you've definitely many times brought up in our conversations different ways for me to be able to see our community and people around me. And there's been times you've challenged me to think differently. So that to me is what a real leader does. That to me is what this conversation can be about, because it's iron sharpening iron. And you can help me see something about myself, and I can help you see something about yourself.
Totally.
Yeah. So do you see yourself as a leader, and in what way do you see yourself as a leader?
I think it's something that I've had to come to terms with, that I am a leader, but it's not something that I naturally stop and think I'm a leader. I more like to play like behind the scenes and like supporting other people. Even though I have realized that often I say, if you can't find anyone else, I will do it. And oftentimes that's how I end up in leadership roles where I'm like the main person. It's because they're like, nope, we can't find anyone else, so can you do it? So I find that's happened like in the community often, in church roles and that sort of thing. But sometimes I think that people like didn't actually search for someone else to do it. They just felt like, oh, Drew's not going to do it unless we kind of put him in this type of situation where he feels like there's no other option. So I think for me, when it comes to leadership, I think a lot of people kind of look at the stereotypical views of like, here's just someone who makes all the decisions and is kind of the front and center person, the person that everyone sees. Where for me, my leadership style tends to be more like a like team focused, where it's like, hey, I got these gifts and skills. What other gifts and skills do other people on the team have? And I don't really care about like the hierarchy of things. And I find people are more likely to like flourish and blossom and to do awesome stuff together when you're not so worried about who is the boss type of thing. So.
I'm hearing in what you're saying your willingness to say yes. So you may not go looking for the leadership roles, but you actually are willing to say yes. Do you think that is a typical leader's response?
I guess for me, the word that comes to mind is team player. I just see myself as a team player. And I guess there's many different types of ways you can lead, and that's a way of leading through action and being whatever the team needs at that time. So I find that in like sports especially is one of those things where like people play certain roles and people are like, hey, like that's a leadership role even though you're not necessarily the captain of the team, but people recognize that you bring something to that team based on like what that team needs. And if you did a different role, it may mess up the chemistry of what that team is trying to accomplish.
So I think what you're saying is that you say yes to the team, not to the yes to the leadership. Curiously enough, that is a very sixth thing to say. So if you were to share with us, like, what are your core leadership principles then? I know you've talked a lot about team, but what are some of the other things that you think is really important to good, healthy leadership?
I think being honest and transparent and open with people, I think is probably one of the main things, because when you have a certain amount of like trust between a relationship, whether it be a work relationship or like a volunteer relationship or whatever it is that whatever team that you're on, then you're able to do so much more because the person isn't trying to second guess your motives or like worried about like power struggles and other things that can complicate being successful. The focus then becomes on getting whatever task it is done without worrying about your ego or the other person's ego.
So really a lot about trust and relationship.
Yeah,
Yeah, that
definitely.
makes sense. Have you ever, like, what kinds of things do you find yourself having to be honest about? Because you said it was about honesty and authenticity and transparency. Like, I know that you have volunteer roles and you have other paid leadership roles and those kinds of things. Like, what can you share about how that happens? Because I think sometimes we talk about authenticity and we talk about transparency, but I don't know that everybody really understands how that actually lives out and gets talked through. Do you have any suggestions or conversations that you have had to have without naming names, of course?
Yeah, I think for me, it's like the first thing that comes to mind is owning up to my mistakes. Like, if we, like, for instance, with my youth group, are running a youth group, and I might have allowed something to happen that probably shouldn't have been allowed to happen. I'm someone, instead of trying to pass it off on someone else, I'm someone who takes responsibility and says, that was my mistake. I probably shouldn't have made that call or decision. And I think because I'm like that, it's created a culture where people feel safe to be able to make mistakes, to be able to own those mistakes, and then also to be able to work on the solutions. Because if you don't actually like center in on like what the issue is and take ownership, then you can't really move forward. So if I spend my time trying to blame what happened on somebody else, we can't actually come to a solution, because really what we need to deal with is like, how should we respond in this situation next time? And I find in a lot of situations when this comes up, we tend to be able to sit as a staff and brainstorm about how we deal with situations. And it happens to be like very open and collaborative, because people are honest about their weaknesses. That's really what it comes down to. Mm-hmm.
I've seen you do this, so I've had the privilege of actually experiencing this with you a little bit. And I know that we've talked in the past about good communication and thinking win-win. A lot of the seven habits have come into this. Why do you think it's really important for people to learn to own their mistakes?
I think because when you own your mistakes, then you understand that even when good things happen, that you can also own those things too. So it's like mm-hmm. taking responsibility for your actions and realizing that you are someone that impacts the environment that you're in. So I find it very empowering, because if I can make a mistake that affects my group, I can also make a good decision that also affects my group in a positive way that probably no one else in my group can do it that way. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of like the two different sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm. I love that, because I love that taking responsibility piece, which I think is very empowering, which is what I spoke to about you at the very beginning, is that you're a very empowering leader in my mind. So based on that, like, what has been your greatest growing edge as a leader in the past couple years?
I think for me, it's actually taking more initiative to be front and center when I need to, instead of just playing a behind the scenes role, if I can, because that's my go-to. It's just to, if somebody else will do it, you do it and I'll kind of sit back. Where I think ideally what I should do is step up with them, and then there would be a better, synergy happening, because I'm not taking a step back, but allowing that person for us to be on a similar level, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, does it make it, is it more like becoming stronger together, or,
Yeah, I would say that, because when I step back sometimes, well, often it means that I kind of don't put in the same amount of effort. Mm.
And why has it been something in particular that's been hard for you to step up?
I think it's the fear of failure. Oh. It's one of those six things.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of types that have struggled with that. But yeah.
So if I don't have to like put myself out there, then I won't fail, and then I won't feel a certain way, and like all that type of stuff. So I'm realizing that's actually holding me back from being a better, more effective leader, because in order to be good at anything, you have to fail a bunch of times in order to get to that place. So I always have to remind myself that whenever you see people that do something at a certain level of excellence, whether it be like in the arts or, you know, as a business owner or whatever field you see, those people have made a lot of mistakes to get themselves where they currently are. But mm-hmm. oftentimes we don't see that behind the scenes work. We just see when they're a success. So
yeah, we elevate people based on our perceptions, eh?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
When you do push yourself into that leadership role, like, do you feel, is that you empowering yourself? And do you feel empowered by yourself when you step up like that?
I find it's a mix, because initially I usually feel nervous, and then if it's successful, I really do feel empowered. Like, oh my goodness, I allowed this to happen. Like, this happened because of me. But then also I can take it really hard if things don't work out, because I can be a sensitive person and take things personally that aren't meant to be taken personally.
Mm-hmm. I think we all struggle with that as well. So is that something you're working on?
Oh, definitely.
Share with us what you've talked a lot about yourself. What you wish people knew about themselves.
I think for me, I would like people to know that they have a unique gift that they have to give to the world. And it's something that no one else can bring to the table. And I find it like, I think one of my greatest joys is to see when people find that. And when you see that they are living into that, and it could be something that I'm totally not interested in, but it's awesome to see when people have found that one thing that they, are meant to give to the world.
I love that. You and I are so aligned on that. That is so what I'm all about. I love it. That passion also, I know, translates into your work with young people and your passion for young people. And I'm really curious to explore, you know, from your experience, what can you do or what have you found helpful to help young people bring that leadership forward, whether they call it leadership or not, but to really engage in their gift or their passion or leading in some way? What have you found?
I think because of my experience as a young person, of having not a lot of experience, like young people don't have a lot of experience necessarily with their gifts and skills and talents and stuff. They're trying to figure that out. And for me, I had different mentors and adults and friends and stuff that spoke truth into my life to say, hey, Drew, like you're really good at, you know, working with people, working with kids. And I'm like, I am. And then when you keep hearing it over and over, you're like, oh, I am. And then you start to own it. And it's like one of the things that I can own now to this day to say, I'm really good at working with young people. But that really started from people recognizing it in me and affirming that over and over. And then I was able to start actually seeing that and manifesting that. So I think as someone who works with young people, that's what I like to do, is get to know them and then point out those things that I see, because I'm a bit further ahead and I'm like, you're quiet, but you are a solid leader. And I'll just keep telling you that over and over and over and over again, because I know that's what you need to hear. And it might not click for you until another, who knows, a couple years, 5 years, 10 years down the line. But I know that is extremely important. I know telling certain people, like even kids that have like a hard exterior or whatever, and recognizing, no, you are really empathetic. The rest of the kids don't see that, but as an adult, I see the little different things that all point to the fact that this hard exterior is just a mask and you're really an empathetic person. You need to live into that. And so I find like giving that those affirmations makes a big deal, and then also giving them the opportunity to actually lead, because I find in a lot of different environments, especially in mine, like in the church or in nonprofit organizations, older people don't want to give young people the opportunity to lead, because they're like, oh, you don't have the experience and you're gonna make a mistake. And my attitude is like, no, that's exactly why you're here, to mentor people. So you sit alongside them, stand alongside them, so that they can have the opportunity to lead. And then when they make a mistake, you're there, so that eventually they have the experience. So when they're at the certain age, when it comes time to actually take other more in-depth leadership roles or whatever, they're like, I've done this before. But I think too often we wait till the older people are like done, and then throw young people in to these situations, and then they don't know what to do, and they're like, see, this is why we don't like let young people take these type of roles. And it's like, you haven't given the person any experience. Like, the reason why you're good is because you had lots of experience doing this and you made your mistakes. Let them make their mistakes in an environment that's safe and caring and stuff, And you'd be surprised. I know there's some young people that I'm like, you're probably going to be my boss later on because I can see that. I can see that in you, right? So
I think that's a good reminder for me because I often, I'm not as good a mentor as you are. So I often forget how I got where I got. And I love that you tracked it back to these people said this about me and that's how I learned about myself. It took me a lot longer than you to recognize the messages that I've received over my lifetime. Sometimes they weren't always positive, but they still pointed me in a direction. So I love that you've taken that and then translated that into how you work with young people. And I learned something about how I'm going to kind of create some spaces in some of the projects that I'm working on right now, in particular with some youth projects, to make that space and make that space to allow people to try new things on or maybe bring some new ideas and do a little bit of failing. I remember years ago somebody told me about, I think it was Procter & Gamble, where they have a failure room, and that stuck with me, you know, in terms of our business at Flow, how we have to try some things on and allow us to have failure room, which is what did we learn by it? And they're saying that they learn more from their failures than they did from their successes. So yeah. I think you're pointing in exactly that direction with young people. Allow them to learn from their failures because that's going to really set them up to lead in our world, which is one of the things we really need. We need more leaders.
Yeah.
More leaders with some wisdom, and you can't have wisdom without experience.
Yeah. And I think this is kind of cool because recently in teaching I've been learning about scaffolding, and I think that's kind of like what I need to incorporate into my mentoring more. So with scaffolding, it's the understanding of like, I'll show you how I do it, then we can do it together. And then I can give you maybe this little piece for you to do on your own. So it's not just throwing you into the water and saying, hey, swim. It's like, hey, watch me swim. Then I can I can hold you while you swim. Then we can swim together. And then you can just go off and swim on your own because you've seen all the different steps for it. And I think, again, that's one of those situations where sometimes we're like, hey, let's give this person a leadership opportunity and just throw them into the water. And then like, oh, see, you couldn't swim and you sunk. That's why I don't do that. Yeah. You know, and it's like, well, that's not helpful either.
No,
right?
It's
so
not.
There has to be like a balance and a proper like release of responsibility based on like where that person's at.
Yeah, I hope some folks that are listening to this either now or later can really hear that, especially those who work with younger people or maybe managers in businesses, to set them up for success as much as possible.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean micromanaging them, mm-hmm. But there is a process of setting people up for success.
Yeah.
I love that scaffolding analogy. That makes a lot of sense to me. So you talked about passions, and I have this belief that kind of where our heartbreaks and our passions collide is the energy that will bring action to change the world. Can you talk to me a little bit about like what breaks your heart?
I think it's when people aren't able to like recognize how loved they are. And I think a lot of the poor decisions and self-esteem, depression, anxiety, a lot of that stuff is rooted in like not feeling like you belong. Like I think that's a huge thing for me. So when I think about it, that's something that I try to do, is create spaces where everyone belongs, regardless of like who you are. And I kind of like to reinforce that, like you belong here. And I think once you have that sense of like belonging, then you can get to other places where you can actually self-actualize and be the best you can be. But until you feel like you belong somewhere, I think that's a lot more difficult. I think it goes with like Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
I can definitely see where you connect that to your leadership or your community involvement and even your teaching. I can really see how you've put action to that? Is there any other ways that you put action to sort of solving that challenge? That is a big challenge in the world. In fact, it reminds me of Lynn Twist, who wrote a book called The Soul of Money, and she talks about how in the North American culture, we are hungry for meaning in our lives, and in the developing world, there's actual hunger. And it resonates for me how you look at belonging as like finding that like meaning in your life. So I don't know if that kind of got us off topic, but how else do you bring love into action or belonging into action in your life in general?
I think this is something I'm definitely still working on, because I realize that that passion comes out of my desire and need to belong. And it's something that, especially since moving to Guelph, it's been a struggle to try to find that space where I feel I belong, because I'm from Toronto, and being like a person of color in Guelph, like I don't feel like I belong here. And a lot of the communities that I find myself, I always kind of like stand out in different ways, whether it be in like ideology, like the way that I see the world, or just like visibly my energy, like those types of things. So I think over the last maybe year or so, I'm realizing that maybe that uniqueness is exactly why I belong. And I think because of the types of friends that I've attracted to myself, those are one of the messages I hear quite often. Like, what are you talking about? Of course you belong here. Like, where else would you belong? Like, so I'm just getting a sense of that myself. So I just think it's interesting that I'm able to at least try to build those types of environments for young people, but other people are kind of building that environment for me.
I think that is, one of the most authentic ways we can engage in leadership is by taking what we have experienced and the pain that we feel in our own lives and translating it into supporting others, rather than becoming bitter or resentful or angry about what we think we're experiencing. You turn it around and say, okay, if I'm experiencing this, other people might be experiencing it too. And I'm going to heal myself by supporting and helping healing others, yeah. Which is why I love you so much, Drew. I love that about you. one of the things that you're raising for me is this whole idea that, we've been talking about through the workshops we've been doing on the 7 Habits together, is this idea of self-leadership. So I'm hearing in you, you're self-reflecting. And you're creating your own, recognizing that it's up to you to create your own life. Can you reflect anything about, like, what do you think about self-leadership? I know we're talking about leadership maybe in the more traditional form, but I think it all starts with self-leadership. What advice would you give people, working through that on their own? What do you think are some of the most important things about self-leadership?
I think for me is understanding, like, I'm the master of my own destiny to a degree, like to a huge degree, actually. I know there's that quote about like, life is, 20% of what happens to you, and like 80% of it is your attitude or your reaction or response to the different events and stuff that happen to you in your life. So I find that really resonates with me. And I realize that once you have that type of attitude, you start to attract and draw the people or situations maybe that might take you to the goal that you want. So I think that's another thing, is to have like kind of like a end in mind, like where you want to go. And I know I'm someone that as long as I can think, I've always thought about, well, what do I want people to say about me? At my funeral, or what sort of things on my deathbed am I going to look back and be proud of? And often I go back to center me, to figure out like what actually matters. And
just for everybody listening, that is the second habit in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People that Drew and I have been working through. So I love that. It's very meaningful. It's definitely core to me as well.
Yeah. And I think once you have that goal in mind, then other things start to just kind of fall in place. And I'm realizing that, like, having a community around you that thinks similarly in that way is very helpful. So I'm someone who, to be frank, there's a time where I'm like, I really need to work on my anger. This is an issue. Mm-hmm. So I went to the library and I took out a bunch of books and I read mm-hmm. about it. And now I just don't feel like anger is even really like one of those issues for me. But it's like, as I'm reading, I'm talking to friends about this, and it's something that like was a process of working through. But I didn't just say, hey, I'm working on my anger, and not do anything, which I think a lot of times people in your mind, you're like, hey, I'm working on this, but what actual steps are you doing to improve that? So I find every year I usually sit and think about, okay, what's the new thing that I need to tackle, or do I need to continue tackling certain issues? Like procrastination is definitely the one on the list right now for me. But
and is that related to your, you know, looking at the end of your life, or start with the end in mind? Like, so procrastination is, it's one of those things in the way to where you want to go.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And it's one of those things too, like, even though I'm an adult, I still have like adults that are like seeing things in me that I don't see and continue to affirm that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's one of those things that I'm starting to like realize, no, I can really lean into this understanding that I can do a lot more and be more effective in the different areas that I'm in if I can maybe tackle this procrastination thing.
I don't think we should ever stop sharing with people what we see in them, like we see coming out of them. I have a 93-year-old friend that I visit once a month, and I see things in her all the time. She's always like, oh man, well, don't tell me that because I'm too old to do anything. I'm like, you are not too old. You make a difference in my life, and yeah. I'm telling you how you make a difference in my life. So I think we always can find that in each other, and no matter when our lives go to or end, till the end, we can shine that light on somebody else's life. I don't know. I never get tired of people pointing out things for me because it's hard to see it yourself a lot of times.
Yeah.
So in closing, I want to kind of circle back to youth. And I want you to drill into, like, if you could only tell youth one thing, what would it be? If you were limited to one thing, you have to really narrow it down.
Oh, man. Two things come to mind.
Okay, two things. You can do two things.
The first thing is, you matter. And the second thing, and this is just because, like, being a teenager really sucks. In the sense of, like, you're dealing with all these hormones and, like, identity stuff and so many different crises that you have, you feel are, like, the end of the world. So I would just advise them to know that, like, this too will pass. Like, it's only what you're experiencing is it's only going to be for a season. You have the whole rest of your life to live, and things look different a year from where you're sitting right now. So not to give up that hope. And I guess it really ties back into, like, you matter.
Yeah. And you matter, Drew.
Thank you.
This was awesome. Thank you so much for taking this leap with me on this journey on connecting on purpose. I feel like we connected on purpose. I feel like we got to some really good, juicy stuff. So
that's awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
There are so many themes of love that Drew highlighted in our discussion. In fact, Drew even mentioned that the thing that breaks his heart most is when people don't know how loved they are. Knowing there are young leaders like Drew in our midst gives me so much hope. Clearly, building up people and being a strong team player is the way Drew leads, and we can learn from this. As we touched on in our conversation, Drew and I led a group through the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. The introduction to that book is all about knowing that to be an effective person and leader is an inside-out job. Drew takes that very seriously, and I see it as an act of love for himself. Leaning into transparency and being honest with people, owning mistakes, taking responsibility for our own future are all an act of love. The best gift we can give others, our staff, our kids, our colleagues, is to be self-aware, to show with our lives that we accept and love ourselves, own our misses as well as our successes, and that we own and celebrate our gifts. When we do this, we give other people then the permission to do likewise. That is at the heart of all loving leadership. Thank you for joining this episode of Connected on Purpose. May you find ways through your leadership today to let someone know they are loved by noticing their unique gifts, and love yourself by stepping in and owning your own.